All right. With a deep breath and open arms, I welcome you to another week of Studio 2, live from Philadelphia. I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Avi, that deep breath comes because I was drinking tea on Sunday.
Literally.
Just literally drinking tea with the pinky up and got an alert on my cell phone that President Joe Biden had decided to withdraw his candidacy for president in the November election. And then I got another text a few minutes later that he was endorsing his vice president, Kamala Harris.
It was and so
I
rapid
have,
fire.
I fell into the political news black hole and I have not come out.
Yeah. And none of us have.
Yeah.
I was thinking actually when the news broke of another where were you when moment back in 2016, election night. When I remembering where I was when I realized that Donald Trump was indeed going to very likely win the presidency. And where I was a ballroom in Montgomery County working as a reporter for WHYY, covering a candidate who was actually about to win his race, a Democrat named Josh Shapiro.
Wow.
And now their courses could collide again. We're going to talk about that this hour, right?
Yes.
Will Josh Shapiro be Kamala Harris's pick for vice president on her ticket as she attempts to become president of the United States?
Yes, and that's why the big question for this hour is, do you think a Harris-Shapiro ticket could win in November? And if you don't, who do you think the Democrats should pick for vice president? You can call us 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2 at whyy.org. There are a number of people on the list, but our local folks, quite a few, are stumping for Governor Josh Shapiro.
Later this hour, we're going to talk with U.S. Senator Chris Coons of Delaware about Joe Biden's legacy. We want to carve out some time for that as well. But before we get to that, I want to introduce our panel for the hour. Joanna McClinton is the Speaker of the Pennsylvania House of Representatives. She served the 191st District, which includes parts of Philadelphia and Delaware counties. She's also a Democrat. Joanna McClinton, welcome to the program.
Thank you. So great to be here today.
We also have Kelly Dittmar, Director of Research at the Center for American Women in Politics at the Eagleton Institute of Politics at Rutgers University. Kelly, welcome back to Studio 2.
Thanks for having me.
And on the line, we have TJ Rooney, who's the former chairman of the Pennsylvania Democratic Party and a former member of the Pennsylvania House of Representatives. Currently, he's a partner at Rooney, Novak, and Eisenhower Group. TJ Rooney, welcome to Studio 2.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be with you all.
And so I figured I'd tee this conversation up with a clip. I want to play this. This is Vice President Harris at her now campaign headquarters in Delaware Monday talking about the new choice before the American people. Take a listen.
Two different visions for the future of our country. One focused on the future, the other focused on the past. Donald Trump wants to take our country backward to a time before many of our fellow Americans had full freedoms and rights. We believe in a future where every person has the opportunity not just to get by, but to get ahead.
And so that's Vice President Harris' first major speech since the announcement. And so you heard that. I want to get your reaction to the unprecedented changes that took place in American politics this weekend. We'll start with you, Speaker McClinton. The president steps aside, endorses Vice President Harris for president. Your thoughts?
So I want to go back to where were you?
Yeah.
I was walking my brother's dog about four blocks from my house and thinking we're getting some good steps in. And the text messages began coming before the news alert. And usually all of my subscriptions give me a news alert before text messages come in. But folks are like, this is on Facebook. This is on Facebook. This is on Twitter. And I got back to the house. I told my mom, who is a few years younger than the president. And she said, well, the COVID must have really got to him. She said, I hope he's okay. She said, but Joanna, when you get our age, every day it's a new challenge aging. So I was home by the time I, you know, fully looked at everything and heard the news about Vice President Harris's endorsement. And I had so many emotions and feelings and still do. I have a tremendous debt of gratitude to President Joe Biden. Many of us don't recall how bad things were in 2020. How much instability there was, how much fear there was, how much uncertainty there was, how much the world is going to end today, I felt every day starting in March until we got to November and we finally had, in my perspective and millions of other Americans who elect him, a person who took serious matters seriously.
Yeah.
President Biden steered us out of a whirlwind of troubles with the pandemic, getting us opportunity to get vaccinated, to get back to work, to create new jobs. I mean, not just jobs that are here today, but the Blue Green Infrastructure Act, jobs that are going to be created in 10 years.
Yeah.
He has done so much for this nation. And then the idea that someone that looks like me is running for president, what, all this happened in one day on a Sunday?
Lot. In about 10
minutes. It's been completely
yes.
crazy. It's been crazy.
And you were just getting steps in and
How about you, Kelly Dittmar? What was your sort of where was I moment and your sort of initial reaction when this cascade of news broke?
Absolutely. I was with my niece and nephews rolling around on the floor playing with the kids, getting text messages, sending pictures saying, like, can't talk now. I'm with, you know, I'm taking care of these 4-year-olds. But that was important, actually, because I think it gave some perspective on the moment that instead of digging right into process, which obviously all of us were doing to some extent, like, how's this going to work out? What's it going to mean in the coming days, let alone the coming weeks and months? There was a moment to be able to say, I think, like Speaker McClinton is speaking to, like, wow, this is pretty incredible.
Yeah.
For an organization like ours that's been, you know, working to increase women's political participation at every level, we've seen women run and break barriers, like the woman next to me, and to see this potentially happen faster than maybe we thought in this near future at the presidential level is just a moment that I think there's a breath to take on that alone.
Mm. Yeah. TJ Rooney, let me get your thoughts now on how you reacted when it happened. You're someone who's been in the rooms, I would imagine, for tough political conversations before. What were you thinking in that moment?
So I don't want to sound like a know-it-all, because I don't, believe me. The speaker can attest to that. I really don't. But somebody had asked me earlier in the week when the president would step aside, and I said it would be Sunday. Just because it felt I'm not prescient. If I were, we'd be at the track.
Yeah, that's what I said. Let's go to Vegas, TJ. Yeah.
Right, exactly. No. It just felt that way. I was surprised, and I have to say I was pleasantly surprised at the immediate organic reaction that immediately followed suit. So I split my time between the Commonwealth and the state of North Carolina. So I'm sort of like it's amazing to be in these two places at this time. And I noticed right away Sunday late afternoon, the North Carolina Democratic Party convened a call of their delegates. Really just for the purposes of letting them know, like, what's what, how it works from here. And organically, they said, no, we want to get on it now. We want to pledge our commitment and our delegate support to the vice president today. And then that sort of cascaded. It literally organically. Now, I'm also going to give the vice president and her staff and team a lot of credit. Nothing happens by accident, but boy, oh boy, have people embraced this. She's lit the fire. We were sorely diminished in our enthusiasm. That changed on a dime overnight that afternoon.
And, you know, TJ, quick follow-up for that, because I read that majority of Democratic delegates from more than 27 states have already pledged their support for Harris, solidifying her position as a nominee. What is the process going to look like now that is sort of mostly out of the way?
Well, Chair, it's going to look exactly the way it should at this moment in time. It's going to look united. It's going to look harmonious. It's going to look, it's exactly what the fear was before Sunday, what the convention wouldn't look like, especially on the heels. We have to give them credit. They had, up until like the last 92 minutes, they had a really good, they put on a good show. It showed that they are unified and together. And I've gotten that sense in talking to folks across the state. But what it does, it kind of puts the exclamation mark on it. It's where our party needs to be, considering the diametric choices we have to lead this nation. So it's exactly perfect, I think, at this moment in time.
Just 90 seconds before break. But Kelly Dittmar, let me ask you, though. Did Democrats coalesce too quickly? Because there's this thought out there that this was all worked out in a smoky back room, and the fact that things moved so fast might advance that notion further in the voters' minds. How do you take in the timing of all this in about a minute?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think we have to be really careful about the potential hyper scrutiny that's going to be placed on Kamala Harris when we know she was effectively on the ticket, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So voters were voting for Biden and Harris. That's transparent. There will be a vote. So the delegates are obviously meeting. Yeah. They're deliberating. They will then vote as they would have. So Joe Biden was the presumptive nominee. He wasn't the nominee yet. Kamala Harris will now win those votes, most likely, through this virtual vote. The virtual vote was already in process as well. So none of this is new. What I worry about is when you have this heightened scrutiny and already claims that she's not qualified and this is not what voters wanted, it plays into what has already been a Republican targeting of Kamala Harris, one that feeds on gendered and racialized biases of competency and qualifications and fairness. And so I think especially for us who are nonpartisan in this is to say, nope, there was a process and the process is being followed. And it's up to Democrats. If they wanted a longer process for deliberation, mm-hmm. they could have had that.
A lot more to come, yes. including U.S. Senator Chris Coons from Delaware, who's standing by to talk about President Biden's legacy. And our big question this hour, what do you think of a potential Harris-Shapiro ticket? Who do you think the VP nominee should be for the Democrats? Email us, studio2@whyy.org, 888-477-9499. A lot more to come.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome back, everybody, to Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. We will return in a moment to Kamala Harris and her potential choice for vice president. Keep those emails and calls coming in. Our question this hour is, do you think a Harris-Shapiro ticket could win in November? And if not, who do you think the Democrats should pick for VP? You can email us, studio2@whyy.org, or call 888-477-9499.
But before we continue that conversation, we want to talk about the man Harris is likely replacing at the top of the ticket, Joe Biden. Biden has been on three of the last four Democratic presidential tickets. He's been a national political figure for over 50 years. He is simply one of the most consequential politicians in the history of our region. And to discuss his legacy now, we have Chris Coons, U.S. Senator from Delaware, joining us on the line. Senator Coons, welcome back to Studio 2.
Thanks, Avi. Thanks, Cherry. Thanks for a chance to be on with you today. Things certainly have moved quickly. As a co-chair of the Biden-Harris campaign, I really did not expect the developments of recent days, but I have embraced them. I have endorsed Vice President Harris. She was with us here in Wilmington yesterday at campaign headquarters, got a fired up and excited group of folks from Delaware, from the headquarters, from our community, and I am optimistic about our chances for this fall. I appreciate your taking some time today and to think about the legacy of Joe Biden. For more than 50 years, as a senator, as vice president, as president, he's put our country first. He has served our region and our country, and he's made an incredible difference. I was with him in the primaries in New Hampshire and Iowa when it really didn't look like he had a path forward in 2020, and when lots of folks counted him out, and has been the case so many times in his life when he's been knocked down or counted out, he has found a way to dig deep, and come back from that hole. And that's what he did. In South Carolina, he rocketed back and ended up being our nominee. I was with him when he was sworn in at his inauguration. And you may remember he gave a speech that was hopeful and optimistic, soaring about how much we could do together if we would just put down the tools of partisanship, reach across the aisle, and work to solve problems. Honestly, at that point, a lot of my colleagues and the pundits in Washington were snickering, saying, oh, Joe Biden, there he is, you know, out of date, idealistic, optimistic. There's no way Mitch McConnell is going to let him get any of that stuff done. And Avi, you know, month after month for the last 3 years, I've watched him sign into law incredibly important legislation, whether it's investing in our infrastructure, rebuilding advanced manufacturing, combating gun violence, and promoting gun safety, the biggest bill for veterans health care in our history. promoting community mental health, combating climate change, bringing down the cost of prescription drugs. In one term, the Biden-Harris administration has had a stronger legacy than most two-term presidencies. And while it was a very hard decision for him to step aside and to endorse his vice president to be the next president of the United States, I think it was the right thing for the country. And I am optimistic that there is more important work left to do and that Kamala is the right person to do it.
And Senator, it was certainly a selfless act by the president to put his country before his own political ambition and to make that decision. I have to ask you, his stepping aside, endorsing VP Harris, a history-making endorsement, what do you think this says about who the president is?
It's a reminder of what those of us who know him well in our region know, which is he's compassionate, he has a huge heart, he cares about the folks in our country who need someone to fight for them. And he recognized that that was only going to continue to move forward if he passed the baton to someone else. Someone really able to not just bring the fight to Donald Trump, but to prosecute the case against him. Well, one of the things that Vice President Harris said yesterday here at headquarters was that as the attorney general of the biggest state in our country, of California, she faced down perpetrators, fraudsters, cheaters, predators. She took on for-profit colleges. She took on those who committed commercial fraud. She took on those who committed sexual assault. And ironically, President Trump, former President Trump, has recently been held liable in a court of law for all of those things, for commercial fraud, for sexual assault, for running a fraud, Trump University. He's someone who, frankly, is going to confront in Vice President Harris a forceful, clear advocate of a type he hasn't seen.
Yeah.
And so now Republicans, frankly, I think are panicking
because they know
they have a 78-year-old nominee who's more focused on his golf score than he is on drug costs and gas prices.
Senator, let me just jump in here. You are closer to these conversations than we are. I know this wasn't your decision to make, but why do you think the president made this decision now when he did? And some critics would ask, did he wait too long?
Well, look, rather than Monday morning quarterbacking, I'll simply say this. Joe Biden has a lot of fight. He has a lot of grit. What has served him well in his more than 80 years is that when people have discounted him, when people have said, you know, a guy who went to University of Delaware and Syracuse Law School, you can't cut it against all these other folks who went to, you know, Harvard and Oxford and all this stuff, he'd get that look on his face and say, no, damn it, I can do this.
You think that's what sort of kept him in this?
Yeah. He got back up. And so he believed, for good reason, in his gut, that he could come back and win this thing. And I respect that his fight kept going right up until, and it will keep going. Look, he's going to keep being president until the end of the year.
What do you think changed, though, Senator?
This week is Prime Minister Netanyahu week. So,
yeah. What do you think changed, though? Because I understand he has this deep reservoir of resilience and grit. There's been so much tragedy in his life personally. Just to keep going from that alone is incredible. But what do you think changed over this weekend?
Look, I think I'll leave that for the historians. I know that he heard from a lot of people who he's known, he's loved, he's worked with for decades. I spoke to Senator Casey, for example, and I spoke to the president several times. And what many who were talking to him were conveying to him was not the concerns of donors, not the concerns of, you know, party leaders and former presidents, but the concerns of average working people, folks who've known him for decades from Pennsylvania, from Delaware, from Ohio, from Michigan, who were weighing in and saying, this time, this one, this may not be winnable. It may be time. And he had to weigh that in what was an intensely personal decision against the gut sense that he could still carry this off. And rather than focus on that, I wish we would take a minute and focus on how much he's gotten done and how much more he may yet do. One of the most urgent things he has worked on this year is getting the ceasefire for hostage deal for Gaza that will help secure peace for the Palestinians and Israelis. I've had the honor of being a part of congressional delegations that have gone to the Middle East several times. He is determined to get this done. And this week with Prime Minister Netanyahu coming to Washington is one of those key moments. He's also determined to support Ukraine in their fight for freedom against Russian aggression. Donald Trump has showed us where he stands on that by picking J.D. Vance, the most vocally let's give up on Ukraine advocates in the entire Senate. He wants to finish the job on that and make sure that the next generation of Europeans can look to the example of Ukraine as a country that fought hard for and retained its sovereignty and its independence.
I wasn't expecting to go this direction, Senator Coons, but can you just circle back to what you said about Netanyahu coming to Washington? Are you hopeful that a deal is very close here? I mean, you're very much a part of these conversations and you have a lot of foreign policy expertise. Can you give us a sense of how close we might be here?
So as recently as last week, both Tony Blinken, Secretary of State Tony Blinken, and National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan, as well as Roger Carstens, who's the special presidential envoy for hostage affairs. I've spoken with all three of them in person, and they're closer to the very specific details of what has to be finalized. And all three are actually optimistic, to put it in a perhaps foolish football metaphor, we're on the 10-yard line. We are closer than we've been at any point in this conflict, partly because of the exhaustion of both parties, partly because of the pressure, the political pressure that's being applied on both parties, and partly because of the urgency of the moment. My guests for the Netanyahu speech this week will be the parents of an American hostage. This is Rachel and John Goldberg Polin and their son Hirsch, who had his arm blown off on October 7th, has been a captive under Gaza the entire time. There is an urgency to hearing the voices of hostage families and ending the fight, the war in Gaza.
Wow. And that could be a critical part of the Biden legacy. I want you to take a moment, talk about what the history books will say about President Biden and how much of that will be tied to whatever happens in November.
Look, he has an incredible legacy regardless of the outcome of this election. He saved our country from three crises when he was sworn in. Remember, on the day of his inauguration, we were still in the middle of a global pandemic of COVID, which had been badly mishandled by his predecessor in its early stages. It ultimately claimed 1 million American lives, and Joe Biden helped lead us out of that. We are also in the middle of the worst economic crisis since the Depression, caused by the pandemic and by pandemic shutdowns in our country. And he helped lead us out of that. Our economy is in better shape today than any advanced economy in the world. Stock market at an all-time high, unemployment at an all-time low in terms of the longest unemployment ever. I could go on. And the third was a crisis of democracy. Remember the January 6th assault on the Capitol that had smashed and destroyed so much of our Capitol had just happened 2 weeks before he was sworn in. If you told me the day he was sworn in that in 4 years he and his vice president would bring us through all three of those successfully, I could hardly believe it. So I think his legacy is secure from his decades in the Senate, from his 8 years as Barack Obama's vice president, and from his term as president. He's gotten more consequential legislation signed into law than any one-term president in our history. In fact, more than most two-term presidents. It is important that we not reelect Donald Trump, or some of this will be undone. And I think there's a simple point worth hearing here. Joe Biden is endorsing and will be campaigning for his vice president. Donald Trump had to go find a new vice presidential candidate because his own vice president, Mike Pence, won't endorse or support him. So too, Donald Trump's chief of staff and secretary of defense, three lifelong loyal Republicans, refuse to support Donald Trump because of what they saw in the White House. I think it speaks volumes that Donald Trump doesn't have the support of the folks who were closest around him when he was president, and that Joe Biden, his last and most important act in terms of his legacy as a political figure, is going to be campaigning hard for his own vice president, loyal to him, so that she can finish the job.
Well, that was the voice of U.S. Senator Chris Coons from the state of Delaware. reflecting on the legacy of Joe Biden, and as I mentioned before,
yeah,
arguably the most consequential politician ever from our region. Senator Coons, thanks so much for the time today on Studio 2.
Thank you. Thank you both.
So, look, Senator Coons reminded us to look mm-hmm. backwards, mm-hmm. but we're now going to spin it forwards and talk about what is coming in November. And I want to go back to you, Speaker McClinton, Joanna McClinton, Speaker of the House here in Pennsylvania. Let's have a frank conversation. Kamala Harris, what are her strengths and weaknesses as a candidate here in the critical state of Pennsylvania?
So in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, Vice President Harris is poised to bring together a coalition of different voters. Certainly, when we think about how President Biden won Pennsylvania by 80,000 votes, and just 4 years prior to that, Secretary Clinton lost by 40,000 votes, we won't make any assumptions that the vice president automatically gets anyone's vote. Mm-hmm. I was very proud on Sunday when she said, "I intend to earn the nomination and people's votes." She has already worked very hard. When we were all devastated by 50 years of precedent being overturned in Roe v. Wade 2 years ago, the first place she came was to the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania to
sit
down.
You think she's going to hit that hard here in Pennsylvania?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. When you think about the fact that we flipped the House right after that decision,
it's
no coincidence. It is very connected. People are tired of radical right-wing Republican policies. So Vice President Harris is very poised to be able to win Pennsylvania and take our 19 Electoral College votes to the big final count. And she's already been stomping around our state for 4 years. She has been coming here as much as Uncle Joe. She's
yes,
been to Pittsburgh. She's
yes.
been to Allentown. We're trying to get her to Harrisburg. We had no idea about the big shift coming. We've been working on an event in Harrisburg, trying to get her to Central PA because people have been a fan. So when you talk about her strengths, she's experienced. She's the first woman to be the San Francisco District Attorney, the California Attorney General, the second woman of color to go to the United States mm-hmm. Senate. She's not someone that's been sitting on the sidelines.
Yeah.
She's been fighting for people for decades. So she's has strengths. In terms of weaknesses, people, some don't know her. Some yeah. will say, "Who is the vice president? I've only paid attention to Uncle Joe." So she will have to do an introduction. And I am confident that when she introduces herself and her record of service, and you look at the option that we have on the other side, as I said when we started, someone who didn't take any serious matters seriously, not to list all the things Senator Coons did. He did a great job listing all
he
of the challenges.
Us the Yeah.
that the 45th president currently mm-hmm. has. Vice President Harris is going to be formidable, and people in Pennsylvania are going to be more excited because one of the things we've been hearing on the ground, particularly from that 18 to 40 block,
right.
was why should I come out and vote if the choices are two older white guys?
But let me ask you yeah. though quickly yeah. about that, though, yeah. follow up, because I've heard some pundits say in some of the younger states, the Sun Belt states, they like Harris's candidacy a little bit more than, say, a Michigan, a Pennsylvania, the Wisconsin. These sort of get grouped as Rust Belt states. What do you say to that potential criticism that she might play a little better in the Sun Belt than she would here?
So we have to be honest. Pennsylvania has a challenge with representation. How did it take 250 years for a woman to be a floor leader
mm-hmm. yeah.
in the oldest
yeah.
continuous legislature in the nation?
Right.
Some started before us, but they stopped. How did it take 250 years to have a woman speaker? We have a problem in Pennsylvania. We haven't had a woman governor. We've never sent a woman to the United States Senate.
Yes.
We just sent a first woman of color to Congress in 2022. My
right.
former colleague, Sister Rep,
yeah.
Congresswoman
yeah.
Summer Lee.
Yeah.
We had one woman in Congress before
so
the redistricting in 2018.
She's got to overcome
but
all
I wouldn't
of
call it a weakness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just statistically true that we haven't elected women, but we also haven't had women come out of primary elections to go on the November. We haven't had too many women on the ticket in November that have not won statewide, including our judicial races just of last year.
Yeah.
Judge
yeah.
Tamika Lane, a woman of color, mm-hmm. won for Superior Court, only the second in history. And 2 years before that, Judge Lori Dumas, the first black woman to go to the Commonwealth Court. Women of color are women winning in Pennsylvania,
yep.
but it is recent.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I got to ask you this question, Kelly, to you, a lot has changed since 2016. Mm-hmm. And we had, you know, Hillary Clinton lost that election. Majority of white women did not vote for Hillary Clinton.
Sure.
And is the country ready? And we mm-hmm. keep asking this question. A lot of folks have been saying, I don't know mm-hmm. if the country will vote for a woman of color.
Yeah.
Have things changed? Yeah. 8 years.
I mean, look, I think the speaker has pointed out the ways and things have changed, not only in Pennsylvania, but this has also been happening across the country. Mm-hmm. We've got record number of women serving as governor. We've got women winning, running and winning at record levels across levels of office, including with great diversity in terms of race and ethnicity. We're seeing women flip seats, kind of be in the most consequential races across the country and win them. So, absolutely, I would say, broadly speaking, women are electable. Black women are electable. And my kind of piece on the electability bias that we're talking about, mm-hmm. which is, I don't know if she can win. That's self-perpetuating.
Yeah.
Of course, she's electable if you vote for her. Like, you have the power as voters, mm-hmm. as donors, as strategists, et cetera, to put her into office, to prove what we already know from existing evidence, that somebody like Kamala Harris and Kamala Harris herself is electable. She's done this and made history at various levels of office. I think the conversation is sometimes a little bit of the problem because we raise doubts among people in people's minds that it is possible.
Self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. But she's set up very differently now, right? Mm-hmm. Because she's coming into this immediately with, what, are we up to 100? $1 million in the first 24 hours.
Yeah. Thousands of people on Zoom.
44,000 black women on Sunday night for 4 hours.
20,000 black men Monday night. Yeah.
That is an absolute backlash against claims that she's not electable.
And I want to bring TJ into the conversation because I looked the numbers. People before have been saying, the numbers show that, you know, Kamala Harris is not doing very well, but the numbers are not showing that. She's doing okay. TJ, could you provide some insight on what the numbers, the polling is showing so far?
So I guess, Chair, the answer to that is what it's about to show.
Yeah.
The one, and I want to second and third and fourth everything that has been said in terms of the incredibly impressive record the vice president brings to this office. That's very, very important. But the one thing that we sort of overlooked, at least for the moment, is who she's running against. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's running against somebody who, see, I think what we were really lacking was somebody that could deliver the message in the way that Kamala Harris can. You know, I don't think the president was up to the task, you know, of delivering that let's call it prosecutorial message that America, especially undecided voters in the Commonwealth and across the country, need to hear. I think Donald J. Trump's worst nightmare came true or will come true upon the nomination of Kamala Harris. I would venture to guess he's not going to want to debate or have a second debate. It was all game for the first one. I think he might have second thoughts about the next one. So anybody who suggests that Kamala Harris is not electable in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, first and foremost, she's, to my knowledge, now you guys are a lot more patched in than I am, but I've never seen a poll that's relevant. You know, a lot of this polling is done theoretical. Well, if it were the election were between Madam Speaker and TJ or Madam Speaker and somebody else, who would you vote for?
Right.
Somebody else always wins. That's not fair.
Yeah.
So now the question is, in real time, mm-hmm. the choice America has is Kamala Harris or Donald Trump. And if she didn't look so good before that question, she's going to look a lot better after that question.
Interesting. So I want to bring in a caller just before the break to set us up for what we're going to talk about on the other side of the break. This is Joan, who is excited about a potential Harris and Shapiro ticket. Joan, you are on Studio 2. Briefly, lay out your excitement for us.
I would have supported Joe Biden. However, I'm very excited about Kamala. I watched her with her doggedness on the hearings in the past. And I think Josh Shapiro, I would hate to lose him as our governor. I think he's a great moderate and a smart, intelligent. I think he's done a great job. So I would hate to lose him, but I'm excited for him to potentially be on the ticket.
So not everyone agrees with Joan, though. Let me read in one more comment here. Craig says Harris should lean in and select Pete Buttigieg. Tom agrees. Pete Buttigieg would be better. We have a lot of folks talking about Mark Kelly, the senator from Arizona. So we're going to get to more comments. We're going to get to more reaction after the break. Joan, thank you so much for that call. Let me reintroduce our panel as we go to break. We're talking with Speaker Joanna McClinton, Speaker of the Pennsylvania House. We're speaking with Kelly Dittmar, Director of Research at the Center for American Women at Rutgers. And we're speaking with TJ Rooney, former chairman of the Pennsylvania Democratic Party.
And we'll be right back with more on likely Democratic presidential nominee Kamala Harris. Do you think a Harris-Shapiro ticket could win in November? Let us know. Email studio2@whyy.org. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
And welcome back inside Studio 2 in Philadelphia. I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Let's get back to our discussion now on Kamala Harris, her presidential prospects, and her potential VP pick. Our big question this hour is, do you think a Harris-Shapiro ticket could win in November? If not, who do you think the Democrats should pick for VP? You can email us, studio2@whyy.org. You can also call 888-477-9499.
Just a reminder, we're talking with Speaker Joanna McClinton, Speaker of the House here in Pennsylvania. We're talking with Kelly Dittmar, Director of Research at the Center for American Women and Politics at Rutgers. And we're talking with T.J. Rooney, former chairman of the Pennsylvania Democratic Party and a former member of the PA House.
Yeah. So let's talk about these VP picks. There are so many options. I'm going to give you the short list. It includes North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper, Arizona Senator Mark Kelly, Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, among others. But one that we're going to talk about today is Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro. I want to go to you first, Speaker McClinton, because you kind of came out already and said, yes, you would support a Harris-Shapiro ticket. Lay it out. Why?
So Governor Shapiro, unlike Governor Whitmer, who I love, Big Gretch, he's the only governor to have a divided legislature in the nation. Big Gretch has everything on her side. She's got a majority in the Senate of Democrats and a majority in the House of Democrats. Other Democratic governors have either all Democrats in the House and the Senate or all Republicans. Governor Josh Shapiro is unique because he's the only governor who has had to deal with a Democratic House and a Republican Senate and nevertheless has gotten major things accomplished for Pennsylvania. There's a bill the governor worked on when he was a state rep back in 2005 on distracted driving, making sure that here in Pennsylvania, we join with all of our neighboring states, by the way, to not have cell phone use in your hand while you're driving. It just passed in a bipartisan, bicameral way. Mm-hmm. I think about the lawsuit for school funding. I learned about it when I was a second year at Villanova back in 2004, yeah. How Pennsylvania is one of the lowest states in the nation on how we fund schools. It's the haves and the have-nots. This budget that we passed Thursdays ago invests $1 billion in public education and also addresses the adequacy issue. When we look at the outcomes that this governor has been able to get through a legislature that otherwise the Republicans could just turn their back, he's been able to maneuver that. Not only that, he's won across the state 3 times. You started out, Avi, talking about being in Montgomery County. I didn't want to ruin it because I was down in Philly. I was at a hotel in Philly and the tears were rolling in my eyes because it was 9 o'clock and things were terrible down in the city. Yep. But he won statewide in Pennsylvania when Hillary lost in 2016. He won in 2020.
He's never lost,
yeah.
I believe.
Yeah.
He flipped a seat becoming a state representative. Yep. We're going all the way back in history. But 2022, when he was running against a Trump handpicked and anointed Republican nominee for governor, he defeated him significantly, including in parts of rural Pennsylvania. So who better to help Vice President Harris sweep Pennsylvania and become our next president than our governor?
Well, let me, because some people are pushing back on Shapiro on several fronts. Mm-hmm. You know, Lynn is saying, hey, he's doing a good job as governor. Who's going to replace him? Deborah has the same concern. What does this mean for PA? But I want to read in this comment from Jan, who by the way, notes that she actually knew Josh Shapiro growing up in Montgomery County, has a lot of fondness for him. But she says, I cannot foresee a black woman of mixed Jamaican and Indian descent running with a Jewish man winning a national race in the United States of today. I say all of this as a Jewish American Pennsylvania suburban female senior citizen. I am hoping Harris will consider Andy Beshear, who was also a talented politician. And will complement Harris's strengths beautifully. Oh, okay, Kelly Dittmar, we've got to bring that up. There's a lot of concern that basically Harris has to pick a straight white male Christian or she does not have a chance.
Yeah. On the one hand, I absolutely think these are, you know, conversations we need to have. I think Speaker McClinton talked about the recent history. So in other words, the fact that this state right, hadn't really branched out in terms of representation. And below that are things like anti-Semitism, racism, sexism, sure. But I also think we have to be careful to not be constrained. If I want to use Kamala Harris's words, we need to not be burdened by what has been, right? Mm-hmm. And so we need to think about what is possible. And I think in this moment, there's a real confluence of factors. There's an urgency, right? Mm-hmm. An urgency. There's the contrast that has already been talked about today with Donald Trump that might leave for opportunities to think even not just beyond having a Black woman and perhaps a white Jewish man, but possibly two women. You know, yeah. like the idea yeah. that we can think outside of the box and say these folks are absolutely capable of doing the job and we can look beyond those identities as hurdles to overcome, but instead advantages, perspectives, lived experiences that could be brought to the highest levels of political office.
And Kelly, we know you have to go. Quick follow-up for you, because Josh Shapiro does provide some strengths that would match up with certain weaknesses that are perceived mm-hmm. by Vice President Harris. Can you say yeah. what a matchup like that would do? What strengths would he bring to the ticket?
Yeah, I mean, I think the speaker has laid out a lot of his strengths in terms of record. And look at the spokespeople that are already out there supporting him, right? So he does bring a lot of support among top political leaders. It seems like a pretty united support in the state of Pennsylvania that will be an important vote in terms of the Electoral College. And he also, like her, comes with that prosecutorial background. He's a strong public speaker. He would be good on the stump. Those are all positives. And I'll just add one other thing in terms of context. I think as we're thinking about the possibility of who's going to potentially get tapped for the vice presidential slot, to think about who's going to fill in
right. yes.
In these positions. Yes. And yes. across a lot of these states, we have the possibility to make history again in the state of Pennsylvania with a Black man who could ascend to the governorship. In Illinois, it would be a Black woman, the first Black woman to ever be governor in the United States. And so not that that should make the decision, but I do think it's context, mm-hmm. Noting that in this moment, a lot could change and a lot of progress could be
but
made.
But could Shapiro, adding Shapiro as the vice president yeah. on the ticket, could it make him, you know, help yeah. Vice President Harris in the middle of the country or in the South yeah. and other places?
Yeah, quite possibly.
Because he is an East Coast politician.
Yeah, quite possibly. Look, everybody looks at the geographic piece. And again, I think, will his greatest boost to her ticket be in Pennsylvania? Absolutely. Will it be in other places where, quite frankly, there are these questions of comfort, right, and electability and, oh, well, we've got this white guy on the ticket. Perhaps folks are more comfortable. Yeah, I mean, I think that's some of the calculation. I'm not sure how that plays out. I think we have to be careful. But absolutely, I think on a lot of the political side of things, as well as the policy record, he absolutely is one among many good options.
I want to bring in a perspective now from the street. This is Diprina from Ewing, New Jersey, talking with our producer, Andreas. I think it was in Center City, Philadelphia recently, about a potential vice presidential pick. Let's roll that cut.
You know, before they've tried a woman running and it didn't go so well. So why not kind of back them in a corner, drop out the last minute? Now you have no choice. You know, and I feel like at this point, with all the money that was, I heard that was raised in the last 24 hours. I mean, I kind of feel like it's gonna happen. We're going to probably get a woman president.
All right. Some people are pushing back on the Shapiro choice, TJ, for policy reasons. And let's talk specifically about Sophia and Craig's concerns. Sophia emails and says, I do not believe Shapiro is a good running mate for Harris, mostly due to his views on Israel-Palestine. Craig says Shapiro's one-sided stance on the Israel-Gaza war has turned me off and his attack on student protests. I think we need a bridge builder as a vice president, not a divider. All right, TJ Rooney, your thoughts on that as a potential liability for Shapiro.
Well, I respect very much the question, and I know that the passion that's embedded in the question itself, but I would respectfully submit that it's not the right question. The right question to be asking is what the policy of Kamala Harris is. Because if Josh were tapped, and I think he'd be an outstanding, amazing choice, then he's going to be talking about what Kamala Harris thinks and what her policy is. So I know it's hard to divorce people who are very close to any specific issue, But in the case of the vice president, he will be carrying forth the message of Vice President Harris and what she intends to accomplish as president. So with absolute respect and admiration to the questioner, I would just submit that the question is best answered by somebody who is more acquainted with the vice president's position than I.
I got to ask you this, Speaker McClinton. You know, I know that you know the governor. Have you talked to him? Do you, any indication at all on whether or not he would even be interested in something like this?
So I've definitely talked to Governor Shapiro, and he should be here as a guest to be able to answer that question for you.
We'd love to ask.
But I'm excited that even he's being considered. You know, so many times when you have these important decisions to make, sometimes we don't think about, you know, folks who are 2 years into a governorship. But I'm glad that he's being talked about at the national level, because undoubtedly, whether it's now or sometime in the future, I see him being a strong leader across our entire nation, because he's been able to build coalitions. Even when we look down to a microscopic level, when he flipped the seat that he was elected to in Montgomery County, it was all red. Yeah. Our governor did the groundwork to become the first Democrat county commissioner there, and to flip more state representative seats nearby that have, of course, years later led to us being able to take the majority back in the House.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, Walter says, I think Josh planned to be on the national stage in 2028. I'm sure he did not expect it could happen so soon. And he would be a great Veep and president in 2032. So that's somebody who's a big Shapiro fan.
Somebody's done the math.
Yeah. let me read this email from Phyllis now. It says Mark Kelly should be the VP. Mm-hmm. He turned 60 earlier this year. Like Kamala Harris, he is experienced but not aged. Amy from Berks County says, I also think Mark Kelly would bring more balance to the ticket. Harris has a strong legal background. Kelly has military service and science. Also, as a selfish Pennsylvanian, I want a few more years with Josh Shapiro. TJ, let me ask you, I mean, I do think it's a legit question whether Shapiro would want this opportunity or should want this opportunity. He has, I think, overall been sort of pretty careful in this constructing this rise that he's had over the last couple of decades. Joining a ticket that has about 3 months to get things together is not a careful move. Mm-hmm. Is this a risk?
No, I agree with the speaker. Just being in that mix, in that very, very close mix, is really important now and going forward. I think that he can't lose. I mean, being talked about this way in such flattering terms. And I suppose if you're offered, I would imagine it would be impossible to turn down the opportunity. Josh Shapiro can, however, I've known Josh. You want to take a way back in time machine. The speaker referred to it when Ed Rendell, I was chairman of the party, and Ed Rendell said, we're going to elect at least these two guys in Montgomery County next year. One was Mike Gerber, the other was Josh Shapiro. And ever since then, you know, like, none of this really comes as a great surprise. He's so good, and he's been so good and so solid for so long. She couldn't go wrong picking him. Yeah. But the history of vice presidents ascending to the presidency, aside from some cataclysmic event like getting shot in the head, is not very good. Right. I mean, remember, we passed over Joe Biden in 2016. So it's a double-edged sword. But I think when the nominee of your party asks you to consider being a heartbeat away from the president, that would be exceptionally hard to turn down. And plus, the plane would be really cool, too.
Yeah, and this comment, Karen comments, Josh Shapiro would be the best choice. He is an awesome person and would be great for this country with Harris. Speaker McClinton, if he were to, you know, be asked and accepted and they were to win in November, and we would not have a governor in Pennsylvania, what would happen? What would be the steps? How would things progress as we reset our executive branch?
So our lieutenant governor, who was on the ticket with our governor just 2 years ago, Austin Davis, would be the next governor if our governor vacated the office prior to the ending of his term. And Austin Davis, for those who don't know and didn't have the honor to meet him while he crisscrossed the state with our governor 2 years ago, he is West Pennsylvania son. He's from the Moon Valley. He was a state representative for 5 years, maybe six. I might be cutting him off sometime because he got elected in a special election just a year after me, 2016. And he, prior to that, worked for the county executive in Allegheny County, has been a young leader, stepping up for gun violence as lieutenant governor. He's been outspoken, convening roundtables all across the state on how we can reduce violence in every part of PA, not just urban settings, but also in rural communities. He is the chair of the Pennsylvania Commission on Crime and Delinquency. He currently chairs the Pardons Board. He's been very a strong advocate on second chances. Austin Davis has also, in his service as a state representative, served when we were in the minority. So he knows how to work across the aisle and get things done. And he's been very present as a lieutenant governor. You know, sometimes the governor and the lieutenant governor aren't close. They're always together. They're always crisscrossing the state, if not together, talking about budget wins and things of that nature. And I definitely know that Lieutenant Governor Davis would be an exceptional governor given the opportunity.
And you think Shapiro's the right pick, not just as a Pennsylvanian. You think he's the right vice presidential pick over Mark Kelly, over Beshear?
So Senator Kelly needs to stay in the Senate. We need we need the Senate to have a Democratic majority for a President Harris. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we're coming toward the end of the hour here. You just heard from Speaker Joanna McClinton earlier this hour. You heard from Kelly Dittmar. We've also been talking with T.J. Rooney, former chairman of the Pennsylvania Democratic Party. A lot still to come, despite everything that has happened in the last month. A lot still to come, and we will be with you here at Studio 2 covering all of it. And to our panelists today, thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, and thank you to everybody.
Great pleasure. Thank you very much.
Yes, and thank you to everybody who commented, called, sent emails. And that wraps our show. It's produced by Debbie Builder, Andreas Copes, and John Ahrens. Al Banks engineered today's show. Kevin McCrory is the executive producer. From Studio 2 at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. We'll talk with you tomorrow.